Our guest this hour asks the provocative question, were you born on the wrong continent? Would you be better off? Would the United States be better off in a European social democracy? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, September the 9th. Our guest is Tom Gagan. He's an attorney from Chicago and author of the new book, Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life. And we'll welcome your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And Tom Gagan joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Hi, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And you will be in Wisconsin this weekend, in fact. You will be at Bob Fest in Baraboo on Saturday.
Yes. Saturday, this is going to be the right continent to be on.
That's right. Fighting Bob Fest in Baraboo Saturday at 10:20 in the morning, I have, is the time you're going to be speaking. So tell us, though, you've been doing a lot of traveling around. You spent a lot of time in Europe researching this book. Is that right?
Well, as much time as somebody who is a full-time prisoner of the U.S. Economic machinery can spend overseas, I was lucky to get a German marshal in 1997, and I was over there for 2 months, and then I went back for 2 months in 2001 and so on. But I've written this book as somebody who has, put a message in a bottle and put it in the ocean, and the message in the bottle is, help me. I'm trapped in a 2,000-hour a year American-type job, and I want a life. Let me out. Because the Europeans have just far shorter work hours. The Germans, for example, which are now the big booming country in the world, the leading exporter, tied with China, they work about 1,400 hours a year. The U.S., it's 1,800. I think the disparity is even greater because it's very hard in the U.S. to know how many hours people are working. There are no unions. There's no real government inspectors. People work out the clock. But even by the official numbers, the Germans have like something like 7.5 weeks more time off every year. I mean, that's 7.5 weeks of your life given back to you. And at the same time, they're not in debt. They have a lower unemployment right now. They're selling to China. I mean, they make money off of China. China doesn't make money off of Germany. And they're not in the clutches of foreign creditors or in this kind of a long-term morass that the U.S. seems to be.
Well, how can they do this?
How can they do it? I think social democracy is a big part of it. You know, if you don't have... But in the U.S., there are three big problems that the U.S. has. First of all, we don't have public goods that are delivered in an efficient way. So we have private vendors who profiteer off them. What does that mean? Well, look at the universities, what they charge for tuition. It's whatever the market can bear. Look at the healthcare system, private insurers, doctors, what they can charge people. You know, we have to pay a fortune as consumers for these public goods that Europeans get for free or nominally for free. Yes, they pay in taxes, but the government can buy and purchase and deliver those public goods, be it education, be it health care, be it pensions even, much more efficiently than people can do by going out in the private market and trying to invest in their 401ks or bargain with universities over tuition, or even worse, try to deal with the health care system, which is run largely by the private market until you get to Medicare. So we're constantly in debt here in a way that the Europeans, who are paying higher taxes, never are. It's odd, but precisely because they're paying higher taxes, they have money in their pockets left over. They have higher savings rates than Americans. That's one of the things that is the reason that we are born on the wrong continent, because in these countries like France and Germany, we'd be out of debt. Just look at the numbers comparing Americans and Europeans.
Well, let me get this straight. If I'm understanding this correctly, I would be in Germany paying higher taxes than I am here, but I wouldn't be paying for the college tuition for my kid,
sure.
or I wouldn't be paying for daycare or health care, and because of that, I'd have more money to spend.
The public sector share here is 40% of GDP. It's like 46% over there. Are we getting 46% of the German welfare state? No way. You know, it is because the Germans and other Europeans, I don't want to limit that just to Germans, are just able to deliver these public goods much more efficiently, and people don't have to dig deep into their pocket, to provide these things that they should be getting for free, you know, after they've paid an appropriate share of their taxes.
I thought, though, that you did see differences in the European countries. You started off in France and thought it was better in Germany.
Oh, I love France. France is fantastic. No, I wrote about Germany for a couple of reasons. One is it's bigger, and that impresses Americans. And the second is they have a kind of social democracy that's different from ours, you know, different from France's. France, it's the state, you know, the public, their state ownership of companies and so forth. The French do very well. They run huge trade surpluses, all second only to Germany. They aren't in debt. They have many of the same advantages of the German model. But the Germans are interesting because central government is much weaker. We made sure of that after World War II. It's much less of a player in the country. And it's really the social democracy, the control that people have, the democratic control over the economy, comes much more at the plant level through, I don't want to say unions, although unions are hugely important, but works councils and co-determined boards where workers have representation rights within the company, independent of whether they're in the unions or not. And I'm really fascinated by the degree to which people in Germany have a real right as individually, not through their unions necessarily, but individually, to control their work lives. It's fascinating, and there's probably more worker control in Germany, and I have to say it's limited, but there's more of it than there is on any other country in the world, including any of the communist countries from Russia 1917 on. You know, it's really an interesting form of capitalism, an alternative rival model to ours.
Yeah, what is this we're hearing all summer long that European countries were also experiencing the financial crisis and deeply in debt, and you know there's rioting in the streets.
Well, the new Europe was, you know, the new Europe that Donald Rumsfeld was touting, but the old Europe, the old social democratic Europe, was different. I mean, basically, what happened was that the less social democratic Europe, if I may say, got the money from Goldman Sachs and got deep into trouble, and the old Europe didn't get the money. Why was it that Germany was running high unemployment in the 1990s and the early part of this century? Well, I mean, this isn't just my saying it. I mean, there's a big study that was reported in the Financial Times yesterday. The capital all went to New York and London for financial speculation. And the Germans, doing their industrial thing, were relatively starved of it. And also, you know, I mean, the people who make these decisions about where money goes, they hate the German model because it's got all this worker control in it. So Germany was relatively, had less investment in it at a time when it was trying to deal with the unification and bailing out East Germans. And the money, the hot money, went to New York, London, and some of the, quote, new European social democracies like Greece, which are really countries that probably mm-hmm. shouldn't even be in the European Union. So,
but you are saying, you are arguing that not only would we be better off in this German or European model, but that the United States, in terms of our economic ups and downs, would be much better off.
Well, look at the economy right now. And what's our big problem? Our problem is debt. So we've got the Tea Party running around complaining about federal debt. But the federal debt is there to replace the consumer debt. The consumer debt is what we were running up into the Bush era. And the reason we're in debt all the time, Joy, is that we're running a huge trade deficit. We're not competitive in the rest of the world. And the reason we're not competitive is that we have a corporate model that is broken here. CEOs loot it, and they leave these corporations in the dust. And the smart money for years has been going into finance, so the financial sector gets bigger, and the U.S. becomes less and less competitive. We run bigger debts. Those debts have to be paid for. And in the past, if you aren't selling enough more than you're buying, you're going into debt. That means consumers were going into debt in the Bush era. It means that the government is going into debt in the Obama era. The only way to get out of debt is to start exporting the way the Germans and the others do, or at least don't run a trade deficit. And you can't do that unless you have a social democracy that has some control about where the money's going to go. If you don't, it's all going to go on the gambling tables. It's going to go for waste. It's going to go for fraud. It's going to turn New York into a casino. It's turned Chicago into a casino. And the country becomes less competitive, and then people are out in the streets wondering why they don't have jobs and why the government is in debt so much. It's simple. We aren't competitive. The social democracies, the older ones, France, Germany, where people have some control over where the money goes, where the investment is, are just doing much better than we are.
And you say that it's not just a good idea that the U.S. Follow this model. You think it's inevitable. You think it has to happen.
Well, I don't think it's inevitable. I just think there's no choice if we're going to keep our national autonomy in some sense. Friends of mine have saying, well, you sound xenophobic. I'm not xenophobic. I love to go abroad. If we had more vacations, we could all go abroad more. But I do think that there's a real danger to a country like the United States that is running up bigger and bigger and bigger debt. You know, to a certain minor extent, I'm sympathetic with the Tea Party people about the federal debt and so forth. I mean, they're deluded as to the fact that you can just cut back the federal debt and the debt problem will go away. It just means consumers are going to go into debt. We have to become competitive. People don't grasp that. And the only way to become competitive is to move more towards a kind of social democratic model. I mean, or let me put it this way. Look around the world and see what works. You know, what works is Germany, France. I mean, they aren't running up into huge debts. They've got their problems, but they don't have that problem. Why don't we learn from them? You know, and instead it's just, you know, the debate that's going on right now is, it's hopeless. That's why I wrote this book. I wanted to show people, here is how you do it. Look at what the Germans are doing. They're the biggest exporter in the world. 82 million people, they are either tied with China or they have led China every single year in the last 10 years.
And they have a thriving middle class, which you say the United States does not.
Yeah, and they have poverty too, and not everybody is in it. But, you know, it's a different situation over there. Is their social democracy was cut back partly because it was being starved of capital. There was enormous pressure to turn Germany into a U.S.-type model. And, you know, fortunately for the Germans, they resisted, but they did cut back their model. There are people who are cut out of it. But there's a big, broad middle class. I mean, the issue in Germany is how do we get people into the broad middle class? In the U.S., the issue is how do we save the middle class?
Let's ask our listeners what questions they have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with Tom Gagin, who is author of Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life. In the book, he talks about a European-style social democracy that would make a lot of us a lot happier. He talks about more vacation time and a stronger social safety net that would benefit many middle and working-class Americans. And we're wondering if you agree with him or not, or what questions you have. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up tomorrow at this time, it's Friday. That means it's our Friday Week in Review. We'll have two guests from different perspectives talking with you about all the big political news stories of the week. Right now, we are talking with Tom Gagin, who is a Chicago attorney and author of the new book, Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life. Tom Gagin will be in Wisconsin this weekend. He will be speaking at Fighting Bob Fest in Baraboo on Saturday morning. Our first caller for him is Elizabeth in Appleton. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on the air.
Good morning. I have to answer that I was born on this continent, but I lived in Germany when I was growing up. And my friends in the neighborhoods were all German citizens, and several of them, their fates were sealed at a very young age. If they did not make it into Gymnasium, which was a specialized high school for those going on to what we would call professions like law or medicine or that sort of thing, they had no chance to go to university after that. And while that may result in lower unemployment rates later, I would not want that kind of system here in the United States, because, for example, my brother did not do well on standardized tests. He would not have been allowed to go to university, but he waited a little while. He matured. He then went to college and then went on to law school. He, like your guest, is a lawyer, as am I. And I see my brother and his example. I see my own son who blossomed late, and I think to myself, you know, there are choices that are made in a very closed society like Germany that I would not want made here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Tom Gagin.
Well, it's not true. You know, there's plenty of tracking in the U.S. I mean, has the caller ever heard of SATs? And the difference, the segregation into these different paths isn't as absolute as she seems to think. I mean, there are people who switch from one track to another, and you can do so. I mean, the problem is not so much the two-track system, it's the three-track system over there, that you can end up in a high school that doesn't lead to a vocational job. The big problem the Germans have is that they don't have enough of the so-called dual education, vocational education, as they used to have. But it's not true that you're on these tracks forever. And I just, you know, I disagree with the caller. There's more income mobility in Germany. From generation to generation, people move up the ladder than there is in the U.S. right now. And there are just lots of studies that demonstrate that. And the tracking system in the U.S. is just rigorous. What is true and what is annoying about Germany for Americans is that in the U.S., you know, if you're from a rich enough family, you can buy your kid in to anywhere, you don't have to worry about the tracking system. That's probably true in Germany, too, but the people who are at the top have to worry a little bit more about their kids getting detracked. The thing that the caller also misses is that there are many people, my closest friend there in Germany who's a lawyer, and his brother is a lawyer, and their sister was going to be a lawyer, and she decided halfway through to get off the university track and into the dual track vocational education, because that's where many of the people who do jewelry design, who are architects, go. I mean, the second track, not the first track. So it's putting American terms on this. It works differently over there. As I said before, the real problem is that they don't have enough vocational education for the people who are not on the university track. Having said that, I also think that the Germans should invest more in university education than they do. It's something like 15% of the country is university graduates, where it's with a bachelor degrees and bachelor of science degrees, whereas it's 27% here. But it also shows that education is not the key to being competitive in the world economy.
Elizabeth, a follow-up?
Well, I disagree that education isn't the key. I strongly believe in education. I would definitely agree that more vocational education is important in any society. But, you know, in my experience with the friends that I had, it did seem as if people were locked in. I had two close friends who felt that way, that they were stuck. They couldn't go on to university. And I just, our system here, I've seen too many people have the opportunity to go to college here because of programs that we have here, programs that specifically include people of different ethnic backgrounds, so that the university experience is rich and diverse. And I think that education and this, the opportunity that we have here, we do pay a price for it, and I'm definitely willing to pay higher taxes.
What do you make of all the stats that show that there's less opportunity here, that there's less generational mobility in terms of income than there is in Germany and France and other countries, in Netherlands? I disagree with you. I think I just don't think that opportunity exists here.
We've got so many other callers on and some other issues and questions, Elizabeth. I'm gonna leave it there for now and move on. Thanks very much for the call, Patrick in Janesville. Hello, Patrick.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just comment and a question. I don't disagree that these systems are working in these other countries, but my comment would be and question is individually the differences in people from socially and economically in Germany and these other countries, and the differences in the people in the United States, our values politically and economically are pretty different, and I'm just not sure that there's a number of changes that we'd have to take as individuals in order for these kinds of systems to work over here.
A response?
Sure. You know, that system that the Germans have basically came from the Americans, came from us. I mean, we went over there and occupied Germany after World War II. We're the country that put the workers on the boards. That was our idea. It came out of the New Deal. The social democracies of Europe are based on constitutions that were drafted after 1945, after World War II. Those constitutions were based on the UN Charter of Human Rights. That was a product of Eleanor and Franklin Roosevelt, the New Deal. The U.S. used to be the great social democracy. Europe was fascist. And people on the left who believed in social democracy looked to the United States as their leader. Sure, there are differences. I mean, I celebrate those differences. I'm an American. I'm much more individualistic and inflexible, I hope, and, you know, pride myself on being a regular guy. In a sense, the formal, stiff Europeans don't, and they act collectively in a way that I'm not used to, but I don't think the differences are that great.
You know, prior to President Obama being elected, I remember hearing on the campaign trail from his critics that he was going to turn this country into Europe. Is he on his way to do that?
You know, not even close. You know, if anything, he's going in the opposite direction. It's true that we've got the health care extended, but, you know, if you look sensibly at what the Europeans are trying to do to be competitive, they try to shrink the non-productive parts of their economy and focus on the productive parts. So what have we done under Obama, who I love, I revere, I'm a great Obama fan? We've made the banks bigger than ever. That's going to make us less competitive. We have this president talking about sending everybody to college. Well, sending everybody to college doesn't make the country more competitive. Look at Germany. I mean, they do invest in education in Germany, and they're the most competitive country in the world. What it does is it leads to more debt, bloating up an economic sphere that's inefficient, and healthcare. I mean, that's just ballooning here. You know, if you look around the Midwest, what are the signs of hope? It's all these places that have hospitals and this and that, but that isn't making us productive or competitive. So in that sense, I don't see the U.S. Under Obama moving in the direction of, quote, social democratic Europe, which is, in my mind, a model that depends upon the country being competitive globally, and the U.S. is not.
Next, we go to Scott in Columbus. Hello, Scott.
Good morning. I wanted to thank Mr. Gagin for his article that appeared a couple of years ago in Harper's called Infinite Debt. It explains in detail, you know, the development of the situation that we've gotten into. I recommend that highly to anyone. Mr. Gagin touched on that earlier, that, you know, the debt cycle that we're in that other parts of the world are not in. And I also wanted to mention another author, Richard Wolff, economist at Amherst, who has written a book recently called Capitalism Hits the Fan. He's also spent a lot of time in Germany. You touched on some of the rights that workers have over there by law that we don't have. Another one is that workers are not going to be displaced over there as easily because, by law, German corporations cannot leave the country without, you know, going through a system where they might be penalized, assets seized, et cetera, so that the companies might be able to be kept in, you know, in country. And you also, in your opening remarks, touched on how many more hours U.S. workers work than Europeans. I think it's an increase of 20% over the last 20 or 30 years. We're highly productive, but the proceeds are not going to the workers. They are going to investors, speculators, and, you know, CEOs. As a result, people are overworked. They have less money, less time to engage in the political system. And what I think, you know, your overall point is, and I would say Richard Wolff also, is that what we need is a movement, you know, people to become involved for social and economic justice. And it is the only way that we are going to turn the situation around. And just one last comment on the earlier caller, the fellow who called in about how different Europe is. It's really sad that, you know, someone like you has to come on and give a history lesson to people in this, you know, and Wisconsin Public Radio listeners when, you know, that information is readily available. We don't get good information about what's going on around the world. And I thank you for your work. Please keep up, you know, keep it up. And please.
Thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate your call, but we have lots of points to cover now. Let's talk. First of all, what about this law that is in Germany that corporations can't leave without penalty, Tom Gagan?
I'm not sure what he's referring to. I think he means that when German companies close down, they have to have a closing plan, which means, you know, shocking to us, that they have to provide some severance pay to the workers and some plan for transition out. But and capital and production can easily go out of Germany. Germans have lost tons of jobs, assembly line jobs, the more lower quality jobs that we're always fighting to save here. But the conditions that get set on this transfer of work to other countries, lower wage, less skilled countries, is that the companies invest back in Germany. And I don't say there's a law about that. It's just the way that corporations work because half the workers, half the members of the board are workers. You know, the caller before talked about the two-track system, how terrible it was to end up with a high school degree in Germany when, you know, you can end up with a high school degree in Germany right now and end up on top of the board of directors of a global corporation because half the directors have to be employees. They can elect the gardener, the person who's organizing the works council at plant A. We have a system where even college graduates can't get on the boards. They have a system where high school graduates get on the boards. It's just a different world over there, and that's why, and I don't want to exaggerate this. It's easy to exaggerate it, but it does put some check on what the corporations do. They do have some responsibility to their workers. In the U.S., the corporations have no responsibility to the shareholders, because they're all run by mutual funds and nobody seems to care, and they have no responsibility to workers. They aren't responsible to the government as they are in China. So the U.S. is unique in having a corporate model where it's run by people who aren't responsible to anybody. And you can see that in the kind of salaries they get, which are just unheard of in other countries of the world.
Do you agree with Scott? We need some sort of social economic justice movement?
Oh, yes. Well, I'm a union side labor lawyer on the side, or at least that's part of what I do. So, of course, I'm like that. But, you know, in Germany, I'd probably be in the center left, maybe the SPD. Social. I'm not a terribly radical person. It's just in the U.S. context, I seem to be further on the left than really I ought to seem. Because the country's just turned into this plutocracy. It's just wrong. And a very inefficient plutocracy.
An email from Frank and Howard. In the U.S., if a middle manager takes a 3-week vacation, higher management would say, well, if they can be away for 3 weeks, do we really need to employ them at all? In Europe, the comment would be, if a middle manager cannot take 3 weeks off, they are running their department very badly. Is that the case?
Yes, I think so. Richard Freeman and Linda Bell have this study. Freeman's a Harvard economist. I quoted in the book about why Americans work longer hours. There's nobody to tell you to go home. And under game theory, if you think that anybody can be picked out and laid off, I mean, there's no order, there's no ranking about who's going to get the axe, you have an incentive to stay 5 minutes longer than the person in the cubicle next to you. So everybody is staying 5 minutes longer than everybody else, and guess what happens? That's why I think the reported U.S. hours are misleading, because these are averages, and some people can't get enough work in the U.S., and other people are in these extreme jobs where they're working 2,200 hours a year because they're afraid of being axed. And they aren't being paid commensurate to that. They're just being putting in face time to make sure that they're not the person who's being who's the next victim of Chainsaw Al. It's a horrible system if you don't have hours. So in Germany, the Works Council set the hours by agreement with management, but management has to enter an agreement with the Works Council, which is elected by the workers, as to what the hours are. And by God, you better go home at the end of it. You know, it's you're there and then you're not there.
We are talking with Tom Gagin. He is author of Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life. And we're welcoming your reactions for him, questions, maybe your own experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn is with you. Kathleen and her guest will discuss the ongoing debate about tax policy and the future of the Bush-era tax cuts. That's coming up after 9. We are talking with Tom Gagin, who is author of Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life. Tom Gagin will be in Wisconsin this weekend. He speaks at Fighting Bob Fest in Baraboo on Saturday morning. Our next caller is Terry in Green Bay. Hi, Terry. You're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. Good morning to you again.
Hi.
Hi. One of the things that I've noticed as you've been speaking this morning is that what you have really identified as a problem in America is not so much a private sector issue, but government and government policy issues. And I think what happens is that we've got, we have a government that in February, we had a huge snowstorm in Washington, and they said, non-essential personnel, please stay home. 247,000 people took the week off. And I thought, well, if they're not essential, then why do we have them? But we have an insatiable demand for the growth in government, and we have policies that continue to send our jobs overseas, but they're government policies, and routinely.
We're kind of losing you, Terry, but Terry thinks big government is the problem, essentially. We have a bloated government and bad government policies.
I guess I disagree. I think that we have bad government policies, for sure, but they're not, you know, the government policies come out of this country. I mean, we're responsible for those policies. People down here in Chicago talk about Rod Blagojevich and how awful and the corruption of the state. Well, who's responsible for that? It's the people themselves. And instead of pointing fingers at Rod Blagojevich, point back at us. That's not a direct answer to his question. I think the federal government is a very small, lean operation. It's basically an insurance company, as Paul Krugman says, with a sideline in defense. They don't have to employ a lot of people. The Pentagon employs a lot of people, but the Medicare and Social Security components of the federal government are small. State and local is a different story. You know, I mean, teachers, policemen, security guards and all of that. But, you know, we need a lot of that simply because we have so much inequality and disorder in the country, security guards, prisons, and so forth. The whole apparatus, it's like a standing army that we have to pay for. But that comes from a lack of order in the and a lack of justice in the economy. If there were more social justice in the economy and in the country, in some ways, some of these expenditures that government has to make would be sharply reduced, and we could allocate that money to providing bigger public pensions for people to live on when they retire.
Now, how do you explain? We talked about it just a little bit earlier in the program, Tom Gagin. The Tea Party movement and the candidates who are doing very well on a platform of, you know, repeal the health care reform, stop this government spending, make government smaller. It seems to be that that's the wave in this country.
Yeah, it does seem to be the narrative at the moment. It's misguided and it's hypocritical because most of these people are absolutely committed to the parts of the government, the big parts, the really huge parts, the big money that's going directly to them. So they aren't going to touch Medicare to themselves, and they aren't going to touch Social Security, and they aren't going to touch the military. Well, there's nothing else to talk about. Once you're done with that, you bought into the whole system. You know, it's why are people upset about the Obama health care? Quite understandably, in a certain way. It doesn't say anything flattering about human nature, but understandably. It's money that isn't going to them. You know, and one of the mistakes of the Obama administration, I think, was not to go in there and do something for your base. You know, that's what Democrats used to do. So in 1964, LBJ puts in Medicare. That's for everybody, because everybody's going to get old. Everybody's going to have a parent who needs medical care. But the Obama health care went to people who don't even vote for us. You know, it's going to people in the red states, uninsured people, people who don't bother to vote at all, not your base. If the Obama administration had created a counter-narrative, look, this money is going for you. These are universal rights. These are, you're going to buy into this. So, for example, you know, which is one of the things I've been arguing for in this congressional campaign I had about 2 years ago, let's increase Social Security to 50% instead of 40 or 39% of working income. Let's move in that direction. I don't think there'd be a Tea Party movement of people mobilizing against the government because they were going to raise their Social Security to half their working income. I suppose you were going to provide Medicare to people from age 55 on up. Do you think there'd be a Tea Party movement against it? I don't. And more rights have to be given to people individually, you know, so that it's not coming from the government. It's something that they have a stake in. They have a right to a benefit. They have a right to a certain amount of power. That's what the Obama administration has to deliver, or the Democratic Party has to deliver for people. Otherwise, you create the stage for something like the Tea Party movement to occur.
Our next caller is Kaiser in Germantown. Hi, Kaiser.
Yes, I think that the one thing that I was hoping the guest will touch is the politics of war. We are absolutely being drained by two open wars and a few secret wars, whereas Germany and France are prospering and not spending any money on their defense, while we are spending billions of dollars still defending Europe from communist Russia. And same with between South Korea and North Korea. I think South Korea can defend itself. Also, my other point here is, can you hear me?
Yes, let's touch that point first.
It's a common one from people on the left. Oh, well, we can't have social democracy here because we spend all this money on the military and the Europeans don't. It's got a certain validity. I mean, if we weren't spending it on the military, I suppose one can imagine that it might be spent in a better way. I suspect it would be spent in a worse way, that it would be that there'd be even less, you know, I'm not saying this because I'm pro-military, but at least the military is competitive. I mean, they're providing exports and arms and so forth that improves our balance of trade. It's a certain kind of industry that works here. If we didn't have that, things might be worse. But the the main point is, if you look at what the Germans have spent in terms of bailing out the East Germans who've been brought into their system, I mean, it's just like a huge welfare, bailing out the European Union, bailing out Greece. I mean, the money that the Germans have put into the European Union, I mean, just is beyond imagining the U.S. doing the like over here. And I would say that the big area of waste in the U.S. economy is not the military, it's health care. The Germans spend about, are the most wasteful in Europe, and they're trying to reform their system. But they're only spending about 11% of GDP on health care. The U.S., which isn't covering everybody, missing huge numbers of people, is spending 17 to 18%. And when the Obamacare comes in, it'll be a lot more. If you squeezed the profit out of the delivery of public goods, you'd have more than enough left over to provide a European social democracy, whether you had a military establishment or not. I'm all for talking about the morality of being in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's a good debate to have. But don't say that that's the reason we can't have a social democracy here. It's just not true. I mean, we've got bigger problems.
Thanks, Kaiser, for the call. I was going to go back to you, but it looks like we lost you on your phone. We will go next.
I talked too long.
No. He might have had a cell. Brian in Dubuque. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I think the paradox that we run into is, you know, when they say that Europeans say that if you can't take 3 weeks off, then you're inefficient. That might work there, but it doesn't here, because before, with all these cutbacks and outsourcing and everything else, you had a person to your left and to your right that you could rely on. Well, now a lot of these jobs have come down to a single person, you know, stage where you have to do the work of two people, the work of three people. Like in my business, I'm in the publishing business. I am it. I'm the person that puts out a particular publication. If I'm not there, it doesn't get done. I can't even take a week off. And so it's like, and the other thing that comes along with that is, as employers want us to put in more hours, some of our other subcontractors that we work with are cutting back on hours. So it's like they want us to put in more hours, but we have less time to get it out. Does that make sense?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we can't do that here, Tom Gagan.
One of the great things that the Germans did during the recession is that the government came in with a benefit that paid people to stay on the job, so that if the company was going to lay them off because there wasn't enough work, you know, maybe 2 days a week, so we're going to lay you off and just have Mr. So-and-so who's next to you working a lot harder. That didn't happen there because the government stepped in and said, no, we'll pay to keep this person on the job full time. You know, every time there's a downsizing here of one kind or another for economic or other reasons, the company decides, because there's no worker involvement in these companies, hey, you know, we've got these people working around the clock, you know, because they're terrified, like lab rats, working longer and longer. Why should we hire any more people? So, you know, even as the economy recovers, you know, and the GDP has been going up, employers aren't hiring because, you know, they saw during the, quote, lean period that they could get more work out of people. You know, it's a classic dysfunction of a country that has moved away from a social democracy. You may not like social democracy, fine, don't like it, but you're going to work 2,000 hours a year, you aren't going to have any vacation, and you're going to be in debt.
Yeah. We just had a situation, a brief comment to Tom Gagan, where Harley-Davidson said its production costs in making motorcycle parts and such in Wisconsin too high, and they're asking the union to have, I think it's like a 7-year wage freeze, and want to bring in temporary non-unionized workers or something. And, you know, it's sort of a like it or lump it kind of offer. What do you make of that?
Oh, well, I've seen it through my whole life as a unionized labor lawyer here. There are no workers on the boards, you know, as there would be in Germany. There's no government that puts pressure on these countries, companies. There's no unified labor market here, so there's the notion that you can go to the South and get something cheaper. And what happens is that often these companies do leave, and they go to the South, and they do get cheaper work there, and then they get less quality work, and then the companies go belly up. It's not just that they move out or move to the South or move somewhere else. It's that ultimately they go belly up. You know, they disappear. So one day, you know, 10 years from now, this company, having moved, will probably not be in existence at all. And you know, the work will be crap in one kind or another, less competitive. People won't buy it. They'll prefer some higher quality good. They'll probably prefer a German manufacturer. And the company will be gone and will be running a bigger trade deficit than ever. I mean, the whole thing is so tragic. But the people who are running this at the top, they won't care. They'll have their money invested in, you know, derivatives or something, you know, so... It's very sad.
Mike in Appleton is with us now. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Am I in?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay. I'd just like to touch on something that one of your previous callers touched on. You know, your guest talks about 7 weeks vacation in the lazy French countryside. I mean, that sounds great. But, you know, I ask myself, looking at the bigger picture, where would Europe be and, you know, all of these liberties that they can take if we weren't here?
Well, where would they be if we weren't here, Tom Gagan?
I think they'd be exactly where they are right now. You know, I mean, I don't think we're defending them from anything in particular, but we certainly are the country that helped set up the social democracy in 1945 and 1946. But, you know, I'd hate to tell the caller, but we didn't beat Hitler. The Russians did, and the U.S. came in and mopped up afterwards. I'm not saying that D-Day wasn't horrific. It was. But Germany was a beaten country by the time that we landed in Europe. Did we keep Europe safe from the Cold War? I think unquestionably. And I think that's a huge achievement of the United States to have resisted the advance of communism. So even if we didn't beat Hitler, we did contain the communist threat, but so they owe us one.
Thank you, Mike in Appleton. Now we go to Mike in South Milwaukee. Hello, Mike.
Hi. I'm a retired physician, and I agree with everything your guest has said. He is right on, and I'm not going to bore the listeners with my commentary. I would like to know from the guest what he thinks we're headed into in the next 2 years, because I agree it's not sustainable. Are we going to have a collapse to get the social revolution that we need? Because I don't see it happening. What does he think is going to happen during the next 2 to 4 years in this country? And I'll listen.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Where are we headed, Tom Gagan?
Oh, that's a terrible question to ask.
Why? Because it's got a bad answer?
First of all, I'm no soothsayer. Uh-huh. And second, I just don't want to predict the worst. Of course, things could take a dreadful turn in this country. But in the end, you know, now I sound like a Chamber of Commerce person, but I want to give another side to this, even though I've been the prophet of doom. You know, the U.S. has great dynamism, flexibility. I mean, this is a great country. It's great civilization. There are parts of the economy that work very well. I think the next 2 years will not lead to any catastrophic period, but I am very concerned about, say, 2 or 3 presidential terms away. You know, if we keep running huge amounts of debt like this, the dollar won't be the reserve currency it is, and everyone trusts anymore, and the euro or the Chinese currency, the renminbi, which I can never pronounce right, will replace it. And at that point, we could be in really serious trouble, because our debts would be much harder to pay back. And that would be a really grim future.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to Rahm Emanuel running for mayor of Chicago, Tom Gagan?
I'm looking forward to the whole election. It should be kind of a political Woodstock, you know? I mean, people coming in from all over the country to run for mayor.
Yeah, that's right. He'll have competition. And I asked that because you ran for Congress to fill Rahm Emanuel's seat, didn't you? Yeah. Well, thank you.
But never again. I'll never do that.
Well, you will be coming to Wisconsin this weekend. We look forward to that. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Tom Gagan will be speaking at Fighting Bob Fest in Baraboo on Saturday morning. He is the author of Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life. Thanks to Rob Ferret and to Bill Martins for producing the hour. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.